What is creativity? How does it operate? What are its parameters? What does it mean to be creative? In this series, WROELP explores the creative processes of people in different realms of life to see for ourselves.
Hi, this is Heather Rose with WROELP, Radio Free Roanoke, continuing our series on the creative process. Joining us today is Lydia Millett, an author, the most recent title, Dinosaurs, to expound on our creative process. Hi, Lydia.
Oh, hi.
Thanks for being here.
I enjoy it.
Well, first of all, can our listeners get a little background about yourself?
Sure. So let's see. I grew up in Canada, though I was born in Boston, and I went to college down in the States, and I have been here basically ever since then. I went to the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill.
Nice.
Anyway, I don't know
my
how much background
did too.
You want. Oh, really?
Yeah,
yeah, it was great.
For a little bit.
That was a long time ago, sadly. But now I live in Arizona, and I work for a conservation group, and I write a lot. I write every day, and I have written, for that reason, many books.
Many books. That's one of my questions. But, what is the extent of your creative efforts?
What is the extent?
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's see. I'm 50. I guess I'm 54 now, and I've been writing novels and short story collections, I guess, since I was in college. My first one was published when I was 26. So yeah, so I've been publishing books for a long time, but I also do other things. Like I work almost full time for a nonprofit called the Center for Biological Diversity, which does, you know, we do work to help save endangered species, and we do a lot of climate change work. And so I'm an editor and a writer there as well. But I've also done stuff like, you know, write op-eds for the New York Times and write essays for various, you know, sort of nonfiction stuff in various venues. So I've kind of done a lot of different kinds of writing.
I see. Well, can you tell us about your current work?
Yeah, sure. So Dinosaurs is a short novel that came out a couple months ago about a man who moves to sort of near where I live now, but like about 2 hours drive away. It's like Phoenix. He moves mm-hmm. to this wealthy part of Phoenix, and because he's kind of trying to escape his old life in New York, and he ends up living next to a house that has one wall made entirely of glass, and he can see the family that lives there through this glass. And so his life becomes really enmeshed in their lives. And so, it's really kind of a simple story about his affection for this family and how sort of what happens to them and how he, I guess, decides to live in his neighborhood.
Well, I can't imagine writing from the perspective of another gender. And yet in your new book, Dinosaurs, that's exactly what you did. Tell me, what was the process for this shift in perspective?
You know, I've always written all over the place in terms of points of view. I think that, you know, any leap of imagination that you take can be large or small, you know, and so your sort of the identity of your protagonist or narrator is, you know, it's only sort of part of the kind of divide that you're crossing, because unless you write, you know, about yourself, like memoirs or that kind of thing. But since I've mostly written fiction in my life, I'm always just projecting myself into some other character. And I've written many times from a male perspective, and many times from a female perspective, and sometimes from a, you know, omniscient third person godlike perspective, et cetera, you know. So this wasn't a first for me by any means to write about a guy. And I'm not sure how I came to that. I just sort of felt like that was this character that I wanted this voice to belong to.
Well, how'd you come up with that character?
You know, that's always the hardest question to answer. For me, it's just like I sit down and I write a sentence and then I see what it turns into. I don't really plan ahead, you know, so there's pieces of different people that I know in him, but he's also no one I know, you know, so like there are aspects of my boyfriend in him. There are aspects of people I've known before in my life, and the same with the other characters in the book. But it's just kind of all pieced together out of stolen information, you know, fragments from other people's lives.
Let's see. Well, you're very prolific. How many books have you written, and what keeps you motivated?
I just love writing. It's what I love to do. And so I never have to seek motivation. So I can't even imagine that. I mean, I have to, you know, it doesn't really take discipline to do something a lot if you love it, right?
Yeah.
It's like I could sit in front of the TV and eat, you know, pizza forever also, you know,
yeah.
It would not be probably ill-advised to do that. But, you know, like it's not a form of discipline, right? When it's something you love. So
yeah.
For me, I always, you know, it's kind of like automatic writing or something where it's just like something that you do that allows you to like think and feel and be more in the world.
Well, you didn't answer how many books you've actually written.
That is a good question.
Do you have a guesstimation?
I think, of course, I could just look at a list. I think maybe like for adults, because
mm-hmm.
I've also written like 4 books for younger readers, but I'm not counting them when I say I think 13 or so books for, you know, for mature readers, something like that.
Hmm. Wow.
Well, lots of people have written more, you know, right? I'm not, you know, but I'm hoping, you know, I'm only 54.
Yeah, but quality over quantity.
There you go. Thank you.
You're welcome. Well, why did you choose this medium for expressing your creativity?
I don't think that I'm a particularly surprising, you know, product of my upbringing. So I had, you know, a father who was a scholar and a mother who was really a voracious reader and also very educated. And so I just grew up around books, mm-hmm. you know, so it wasn't like I was striking out into new territory away from my family.
Right.
It was just like I loved reading growing up, and I still love reading, and I also love making my own books. I did for a while as a teenager try opera singing, and that was much more alien to me. And finally, I had to admit that I wasn't suited for it, you know?
Yeah. Well, who are your favorite authors?
Gosh, that is, you know, it absolutely depends when you ask me, because it's like whatever I'm loving at the moment. I could never pick a writer who I love above all other writers. Right now, I love this woman named Melanie Challenger, who's written 2 books that I've just read that I absolutely adore. But it's not fiction, you know, it's like kind of philosophical, meditative, kind of nonfiction about extinction and about how humans have sort of forgotten that they're a part of nature and stuff. So one's called How to Be Animal, and I love that. I read that first, and then there's one called On Extinction, and I'm loving that as I read it second. So I'm loving her right now. This writer named Dan Flores, I've also been really keen on this year, who also is a nonfiction writer. So I'm actually reading a lot of nonfiction right now.
Well, that's interesting. I find it really hard to read nonfiction. I'm a fiction reader.
Well, you know what? It totally depends, though, because I was kind of like that, too. And then recently, I realized that it just depends how it's written. And so much nonfiction is just as, like, compelling if it's written sort of in a narrative way and like has its own character and stuff. It's just like reading fiction, honestly. I mean, it just has to be good. It can't be dry and wonky and boring. You know what
yeah.
I mean? But so you just have to find, I think, the right book for you in nonfiction, and then you'll love it. And for me, it's like I feel I'll never have enough time to learn everything that's in these books, you know, because it would take like centuries, you know, it would take like so many lifetimes. And so I'm really excited to be able to read them and to sort of, I don't know, to like learn something, but in a way that is not boring.
Yeah, that sounds exciting. Well, how do you make the leap from the idea in your head to the art you produce?
You know, I think that I just, there isn't really a leap. It's just about, because writing's sort of the way I think.
Mm.
So I think, you know, like a painter might be that way too, that you actually think through the act of painting or the process of painting, or the same with like, I don't know, a composer or just like a, you know, a songwriter or whatever. Like you actually know what the thing is by making it rather than sort of planning it ahead of time. And so there's no real, like, it's not a conscious act of translation of an idea into text. It's just kind of you do something, and then as you're doing it, it becomes what it is. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do. And that does answer another question. Can you see the finished product before you start, or does it unfold as you do it? I think you just answered that.
Well, not entirely. Yeah. So I don't know. You're right. I did answer it mostly. Like, I know I don't see it before I start, but I am usually thinking of a particular particular tone that I want to achieve at the end of it. So I'm kind of writing toward that, like toward that moment or tone.
So you know the ending?
But I don't know it in plot terms. You know what I mean? I only know it in feeling terms, like how I want to feel at the end. And I don't always even know that, truthfully.
Oh.
When I'm lucky. When I'm lucky, I know that. But or it may even come like when I've already started the book that I then begin to feel what the end should be. You know? So it's all just, it's all during itself. It's all in the process of making the thing that I find out what it is.
Well, how do you want the readers to feel when they finish your books?
Well, it absolutely depends, you know, on the book. I would hate to write like the same book over and over again, although all of us do that to some extent, right? Because we have like habits and tropes and like lexicons and libraries of images and that we return to, right? But all I can say is that I want them to feel. I want them to feel, and that in that feeling, I also want them maybe to also think, you know, so that it's not just sentiment or emotion for its own sake, but there should be always a kernel of an idea that's lodged in that like affective, in that subjective moment of reading at the end, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like a takeaway?
Yeah, I guess, but it's not that kind of product based. It's more like it's not a deliverable. It's more like, I don't know, like I want them to step into a kind of built feeling that also offers an idea. I guess that's the best way I can put it. But you could call it a takeaway. It's just, I wouldn't really call it that because that sounds like I'm telling people how to read it, which I wouldn't and can't, you know, but I'm hoping that I can make a thing that will inhabit them like in some way, you know,
right.
but I never think in terms of like a target audience or like anything that, you know, deliberate.
Okay. So you don't have anybody in mind when you're writing your book?
No, it's just not the kind of writer I am. Otherwise, I only have myself in mind, honestly. It's just sort of like, I write the book I want to read.
Yeah, I see that.
And if I had to think of an audience, I think it would make me really nervous.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. Like the, what is that called in psychology? Like when you, the observer effect?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, exactly. No, it's right. Like, how would that affect thinking of some other would completely compromise probably the coherence of what I was doing.
Or just change it.
Right. And I think it would be compromising because I just can't work that way. Now, there's probably plenty of writers for whom it would not be a problem, but I'm just not one of them.
Right. Well, how do you know when a piece or project is finished and needs no additional work?
Oh, you know, I wish I could say that I had a really good measure for that, but really it's just when I can't look at it anymore. You know, like I don't want to read through it anymore. I don't want to comb through it for nits anymore. I just am fatigued, I guess, and I need to do something new. That's usually when. Or, you know, if I know it's not really what it should be, but I can't look at it anymore, sometimes I'll just put it away for a while and then come back to it later.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Like how long
do you... Yeah, sometimes you need time, right?
Yeah, but how long do you put it away for?
Really depends, but it can't be too long because then you just sort of
lose it
slowly. Yeah, you kind of are too distanced from it, you know?
The imagery.
So I don't know. It might be like 3 months or 4 months would be a fairly long time.
Yeah.
And then come back to it. You know, it just depends what else I'm working on because I wouldn't stop writing. I would just stop working on that project for a while. And it would usually be, you know, it would be a completed draft. It wouldn't be like I was 2/3 of the way through writing it. It's just that maybe it wouldn't be in its final form, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, I have another question. Do you work on one thing at a time or like multiple things at a time?
You know, I usually do work on one thing, but I'll take breaks from it to work on other things. So I guess both.
Yeah.
You know, like in a given day or even a given week, I would usually just be working on the same thing. But I might, if I'm at a certain kind of, I don't know, impasse with something, I might just sort of take a break for a few weeks and, you know, and come back to it. Yeah.
That sounds fair. Well, what's a real-life situation that inspired you?
For this book or for, like, just in general?
In general.
Well, you know, I'm just most, I really am kind of most inspired by, like, animals and trees and other critters and, like, just parts of the natural world and that I can see and hear and, you know, kind of love. You know, I think more and more in my life, that's what makes me feel the most, even though my books are pretty, you know, they're mostly populated by people, humans. But really, like, where I'm inspired is probably the rest of the world that aren't humans, you know?
I do know. Well, that's your point of view as human, but you can be inspired by other things.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, please describe your state of mind when you're creating something.
Well, it really depends not only which project I'm working on, but like what part of that project I'm on or like what moment I'm in, you know, because you want to sort of just be, you know, you're sort of naturally just a part of the scene that you're making in a book. And so it's sort of defined by whatever actual content and you know, the voice of whatever I'm doing. So it's more like I'm part of, you know, the voice of the characters that I'm writing at a given time. So it really changes, right? Because I write different things at different times and I don't have just one voice really that I write in. Although I think all the voices are similar. It's not like, you know, you could probably tell one book of mine was a book of mine if you'd read something else.
Mm.
But you know, I mean, yeah, it's just like, yeah, I guess I've sort of hang around in the personality of who I'm mostly writing about. I guess I don't know how else to put it. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, but it also reminded me of another question that I have for you. I thought of. Well, you're very funny in your books. Are you funny in real life?
Haha. Yeah. I don't know. I'd have to ask other people around me. I don't think of myself as I think I'm droll sometimes. I don't think I'm like a laugh riot, like constantly sort of.
Really? I thought your books were
being comedic. Oh, no. Thank you. I thank you so much. Yeah. No, I mean, I hope that my books are funny. So that's great to hear.
I mean, ironic, like, kind of funny sometimes. Mm-hmm. Just like.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Right. Some are kind of broader and some are like quieter. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
But myself as a person, I think, I don't know. I doubt I'm as entertaining, but yeah, you'd have to ask like my boyfriend or my kids or something.
Okay.
but I am always like laughing a lot at other people. Like I laugh a lot, probably too much, as my mother used to say when I was small. But like loud laughter, you know. I'm prone to laugh myself.
So you find humor in life?
Yeah, yeah. But I'm also pretty sentimental, you know. It's pretty easy to like make me cry or whatever also. So yeah,
cool. The whole gambit.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Well, do you have to be in a certain mood in order to create?
Yeah, I think I'm usually in that mood, but I can be out of it, definitely. Like I don't really like writing if I'm like staying in a hotel somewhere or something. Like I like to write at home.
Mm.
I like to write in my own like sort of little quiet environment. And I wasn't always that way. I used to like to write in public and I could write in lots of different situations, but now I'm sort of routine bound.
Gotcha. Yeah. I like my routine too.
Yeah. Well, you just can actually really build something when you have a routine and you have,
right.
You can rely on, you know, you can rely on that structure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like structure. It's really good for people with ADHD.
Yeah. Yeah.
What environmental factors are demonstrated to be helpful or limiting to creative process?
I mean, so I would think just, you know, honestly, the biggest thing would just be having the like luxury, right. And the freedom of actually, for one thing, having the time to do, to make stuff, you know, and then having the space and the energy to do it. All of it seems essentially socioeconomic to me.
Yeah.
Within that, you know, within that, I think that people can be, you know, can have really different conditions that they like, that they prefer. But the first condition is just not living in under extreme duress, frankly.
Exactly.
You know? Right?
I agree. I think we all need a universal basic income, but that's my own opinion.
Oh, no, that's a great idea. I agree.
Well, vote your conscience or something.
Don't worry. I totally vote.
Awesome. Well, does your word challenge any assumptions or conventions?
I mean, I think recently what I've been working on has been like this idea of human exceptionalism, of like people thinking that not only that there is a hierarchy of people, right, of humans, but also that there's a hierarchy in the whole world in which like humans are at the top. And so I don't believe in that. And I've been, so a lot of what I've been reading as well as what I've been writing is challenging that notion of human exceptionalism, you know, or human supremacy, if you want to call it by a different name, human supremacy. So I'm more and more writing toward like investigating the problematic of that assumption of culture, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah, I learned that in my environmental ethics class.
Yeah, when did you take that class?
I took it at, I think at Hollins, and it had to be like 10 or 15 years ago. That's a little...
Yeah, so it's great that they're teaching about that. I feel like it's something that, you know, I mean, generally sort of Western philosophy has promoted human exceptionalism rather than arguing against it. So it's cool that you covered that.
Yeah, it did open my mind. Yeah. So what is the role of education in your creative expressions?
I mean, do you mean my own education? Or well, I think that I was lucky to have some writing teachers when I was in college who I really loved. Who were really encouraging to me, even if I maybe wasn't such a good writer at that time, you know, like they were lovely, and that was part of it. And also my parents were always really lovely about my writing and stuff. So I think like education in the sense of having been sort of, you know, just like supported in that, like that is, you know, by the various folks I knew was probably really important. And then for myself, like it's just, it never really stops. Like education's just really ongoing. Like reading these books I've been reading lately, these nonfiction books, almost feels like I get to go back to school again, but without, you know, without grades and pressure.
Yeah.
You know? And so like educating myself again, that means a lot to me now and really does like inform what I'm writing about.
So do you really like birds?
I do really love them. I was really bored of them when I was younger. You know, like I just kind of found them boring, but I love them now.
So you're a little bit of Jason. No, wait, who is that? Gil?
Jason's the bird watcher guy. Yeah
but Gil found it boring, and then he...
Right, exactly. Yeah, so I was stealing from my own life there. But I love all, you know, I really love, I'm just all over the place. You know, I love like marine mammals. I mean, there's not many kinds of life that I'm not interested in to some degree or another. I mean, who doesn't love mammals also? Of course, we all are very mammal oriented. So like elephants, I just like elephants. I desperately love elephants, you know, but I really do. I just like watching the birds in my yard the way that I have Gil watch his in the book, because those are my same birds. You know, those are my backyard birds that are in the book.
Right.
And especially like I particularly love the quails that we have here. And the roadrunners are pretty awesome too. And the raptors, you know, like the hawks are really great. So yeah, there's a lot of great birds in the desert. And you can see them. You can really see them here, you know, because we don't have as much cover as you do like back east or whatever.
Yeah.
So we can really, they're very visible compared to like in Maine or something like that, you know?
Well, what does your typical day look like?
Usually I get to write for about an hour in the morning while my boyfriend takes my son to high school. Because it's a pretty big drive. We're like 35 to 40 minutes from his school. Mm. So I kind the kindness of my partner in driving my son to school allows me to write before my job starts, because my job starts at 8:30. Mm-hmm. So I have to get in an hour before that. And then I like to write about an hour and a half in the evenings too. And I usually do that before dinner or whatever. And then, come home for dinner. I get to write in a little sort of guest house that, actually my mother owns, that's on the property next to mine in the desert. So I just kind of walk over there. And then I walk back, you know, for dinner. And so it's like pretty ritualized right now. It's like maybe 2.5 hours a day every day.
So do you work a 9 to 5?
I actually work 8:30 to 2:30. So it's
that's
like a 30 hour week. No, it's great. I'm so grateful that I don't have to do 40 hours. Right.
Yeah.
Cause like, I don't know how, not sure how I could be like a mother and get my writing done, and also have a 40 hour, a week day job.
Mm-hmm. That's hard.
I love my work. So I want to do it, you know, mm-hmm. like I want to, even if, I mean, truthfully, even if I didn't get paid, I would still want to have that job, even though I would really miss the healthcare. I'm not going to lie.
But, well, what do you do there?
I love it, yeah. Well, it's more, I'm called like the chief editor, but I write stuff and I edit stuff all the time. So I'll edit like press with all the press releases that are going out, or the emails that we send out, to our members, and, mm-hmm. you know, or just like any, like our website, and, you know, I'll edit pages for that, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So I kind of just, yeah, I like to look at most of the things that we send out. But it's really like what we do and the sort of passion that we bring to like saving these species and stuff that keeps me, just really fascinated to be there.
What is it called again?
It's called the Center for Biological Diversity.
Okay. And it's located in Phoenix?
It's actually... We have a bunch of different offices, but the headquarters are here where I live, like in Tucson,
Arizona.
Yeah, but we have like offices in D.C. and Oakland and L.A. And Portland. You know, but there's like, I don't know, there's like 15 offices or something. Florida.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. We've grown a bit since I started working there like 20 years ago.
Are you a nonprofit? 501c3?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Okay. Cool. I'll look you guys up. Maybe I'll get an interview with somebody there.
Oh, yeah. You totally
should. You could totally hook me up.
Yeah, I could. I could. I absolutely would.
Thank you.
Just you should look on our like staff page. It's like just biologicaldiversity.org.
Mm-hmm.
And just like see which of the staff members interest you. And then I'll connect you if you want.
Okay. That'd be great.
Right. We have awesome people who work for us, like really brilliant. So I think you would enjoy it.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you. Well, if you could change one aspect of our society through your work, what would it be?
Well, I mean, I don't know in terms of aspects. Oh, through my work. Oh, my God. I mean, I guess I would just want to stop the extinction crisis, mm-hmm. you know? I mean, I'd have to aim high. You know, you're asking me, you know, if I get a wish, that
yeah.
would be it. Yeah.
Go for it. I think that's great.
Right?
Well, I hope the forces that be listen to you.
Me too.
Mm-hmm. What is your creative goal and how attainable do you think it is?
Well, it's different for each project, I think. I mean, I guess I would, on a like sort of career level, I just want to be able to keep writing books, you know, and for people to read them. I mean, that sounds really elementary. I don't know if you meant something fancier, but for me personally, that's enough to make me happy for the most part. Just to get to write my books. So more sort of aesthetically, I think, or like, you know, in terms of like the craft of writing or the content of it, I think I just want to keep being inspired to do new things, or at least new for me. You know, and I don't want to sort of, I would hate to start repeating myself, you know?
Well, what's next, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I've just started, I guess, a new novel. And I have a draft novel that I finished, and then I also have a book of short stories, and I have a sort of a memoir thing that probably the memoir, I mean, it's not exactly a memoir, but I'm just going to call it that because it's hard to kind of describe, but that and the stories will probably come out next.
Mm, okay. I look forward
to
that.
Yeah, but I'm not sure when. Okay. Awesome.
What is something you've learned recently?
You mean about writing or just like existentially?
Anything.
Like about... Well, let's see. You know, since I have that puppy, I've learned that potty training is no fun. That's one thing I've learned.
Oh, really? You didn't know that before?
Well, I have to say that, like, my older dog is a pug dog, and he just, and I had a pug dog before that, and they just weren't
that hard.
There was hardly anything to it. Yeah, no, they just kind of, and this guy, we've only had him for a few days, and I can't really, and he's actually really smart and catching on, but yeah, both my pug puppies were just like, I almost had to not show them, you know, and they just, at least my second one just really, yeah, so I never had to know anything.
Well, kind is your second one.
It's he's like a mix. He's got some pug in him and maybe some boxer and maybe pit bull or bulldog or something. They don't really know, you know. And also some chihuahua you can also see.
Really?
But he's definitely
how big
he's gonna
is
be
he?
A lot. We don't know how big he's gonna be. Like he's 4 months old. We just got him. He's only 4 months old. And he's already about the size of our pug dog, who's like, you know, 11 years old. So I don't know. They were saying he'd only be like 30 pounds or something, but I have my doubts. I think he might be like a 40-pound dog, or, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It just already seems pretty big.
Who is your greatest influence?
Ooh. Well, I mean, I guess it depends, like, what part of my life we're talking about, you know, like, I'm still really glad that, so I had this boyfriend when I was in my 20s named Randolph, and he just had the best taste in books, and he just read things that I'd never read before, and when I read those books, it really just kind of opened my eyes to, you know, to what maybe I could even try to do as a writer, things I hadn't seen before, you
like
know?
What?
So he, in my, well, just all kinds of stuff, like a lot of European fiction from, like, the early and mid 20th century that I hadn't really encountered in school, or at least hadn't read a lot of in school. Just stuff that was more, I don't know, more how shall I say it, just like more abstract and more about ideas and stuff.
Right.
So that was in my 20s, and I don't really know who I would be as a writer if I hadn't hung out with him so much. He's still one of my best friends, but yeah. And then yeah, I actually think my ex-husband also was a big influence on me with some of his ideas about nature. So that was like in my 30s. So I think like different. Oh, and my friend, I have a really good friend who's a writer, Jenny O'Phill. And
oh yeah, she's good. I've read her.
Yeah, she is. And we've like known each other since college because we went to the same college. And she has like sort of affected me critically too, like her, and also her, like, you know, her support and her, you know, her faith in me and faith in writing and stuff, and her aesthetics, those have affected me too, you know? So I don't know. Yeah. Different people at different times. And in terms of writing itself, like there's so many different writers that I love that I couldn't even really begin to say, you know, like and many of them are like in translation or, like I used to always say, but it's still true. This, Austrian writer named Thomas Bernhardt was just a huge influence on me because he was really serious and kind of about, you know, about philosophy and about existence and stuff, but also funny, like really funny at the same time. And so like learning sort of that could be done. That was a big deal. That was a big deal to me at the time. Sorry, I'm doing my physical therapy exercise right here.
Okay. Yeah, that's a question I have for you. What are you grateful for?
You know, so many things that there's very little that I'm not, that I have in my life, you know?
Yeah.
And, just, I mean, everything. I don't know. I feel that it's all gravy being alive, you know?
Yeah. If you're like, if you have enough money to.
Yeah. But sometimes I think even just, I don't know, just getting
the chance,
to be here, you know, just getting to be here. Yeah.
Yeah. The chance, yeah. The hope. Well, what are your words of wisdom for someone starting out in your field?
I would say if they want to write, they should just read a lot, and they should read, you know, things that they aren't already familiar with, you know, things that are outside their, you know, whatever so-called comfort zone, mm-hmm. you know, that they should read things that they haven't, that maybe they're hostile to at first or don't really get at first, but just keep going and do it. And it might give you something, you know, like listening to different music than you've ever listened to before or going yeah. to a new place or whatever. Just like stick with it. That's what I'd say. Stick with those other things that aren't easy for you okay. as a reader. And I would say also just never don't try to be a writer if you don't like reading. I have seen kids like, you know, as like when I was in writing workshops when I was young and stuff, like in college, there were some kids there that just weren't, they actually didn't like to read, but they thought they wanted to be writers. And I would just say like, no. Don't do that. Because if you don't like to read, then just find a different thing to do. I don't know, man. I don't know why you'd be in a writing workshop if you don't like to read.
Or but, why in general? That just baffles me. Why wouldn't you like to read? Maybe it's difficult, I don't know, man. For them.
Right. Or that they just had a really low bar for like how much reading constitutes really being a reader. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's not just having the aptitude to read, but also choosing to read when you could be, you know, watching TV.
Yeah.
Sometimes, not always, right? But because I watch TV. But you know, sometimes you have to be reading if you want to write.
Absolutely. Well, what is the role of a writer in society?
I mean, you tell me. I don't know. I mean, I think it depends on the society. You know, I don't think in the United States that we have great reverence for writers or artists or intellectuals. Mm-hmm. I mean, we can go as far as like movie stars and pop stars, but mm-hmm. actual people that are doing like primary creative work that is maybe sometimes more difficult to consume, I don't think we have much respect as a culture for
yeah.
them. But you know, other countries do, like Northern Europe. You know, my friend Jenny is always being like taken to Northern Europe because people like care about her books there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like you know,
she wrote Weather, right?
Right, Weather and Department of Speculation. Mm-hmm. And her first book a long time ago was called Last Things. Mm-hmm. But basically And say, you know, many South American countries really have this culture where the political and the intellectual and the artistic are all kind of interlocking. And there is like a real respect culture, and or Russia, parts of, you know, Russia, like with their poetry tradition, you yeah. know. So they're like, there are other countries where writers are not as like serious writers are not as marginalized as they are in here in the States, I think. So anyway, all I'm saying is I think it's kind of case by case what role writers are sort of allowed to play by the cultures they live in.
But what do you think it would take for our culture to revere all the writers like they do in Northern Europe? Or
I mean, I think that we would just have to be a better read and better educated people, honestly. I think that we need to, you know, for example, just like that education should be funded by the federal government better than it is. Mm-hmm. That, you know, we just have to have a better educational system if we're going to be at the forefront of sort of inventing new things and you know, trying to caretake the world for the future, because we mm-hmm. really are in a bit of a crisis, right? And we just won't have those tools without a better education system.
Yeah, take the money out
of it. A shared reality, right? That isn't a QAnon reality.
Mm-hmm.
We need that too.
We do. Well, thank you for sharing your creative process with our listeners, Lydia.
Well, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it was lovely. You have been listening to Lydia Millett, an author, and I'm Heather Rose with Radio Free Roanoke, 95.7 FM.
Hi, this is Lydia Millett. I'm a writer, and you're listening to WROELP Roanoke.